Welcome back to Totally Unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. It is Friday, December 11th, 2015. This next episode is by far the funniest episode I probably ever uploaded. My guest is Jay Snyder. We talk about stories. We don't even talk about stories. We just tell stories. That was probably a little redundant. We tell stories. This is going to be part of a new segment coming up called Story Time with Jay Snyder. This guy's got more stories than he does friends, and he's got a lot of friends. So listen to the stories. You can come in and out of this episode as often as you like. There's just so many stories. We try to match each other story for story. Not all funny. Some very revealing. Some just hilarious. Nothing going on this weekend, but December 18th, I will be at the Goat Coffee Shop in Yellow Springs. I believe that's what it's called. I don't even know. Right down from a couple doors down from Import House, with some other local comedians from the area, Luke Capasso, another girl named Adrian Miller, I believe, Jessica Grau, and I'm just doing this from memory, guys. I'm sorry if I forgot anybody. There's a couple other people I don't know. Come check us out, Yell Springs. I think it starts at 8 o'clock on the 18th. That's a Friday. Then after Christmas, the 26th and the 27th, I'll be featuring at the Dayton Funny Bone with my good friend John Evans from Pittsburgh. Come out, very funny guy. We'll have a good time. Two shows Saturday, one show Sunday, I believe. And then in January, I got other dates locally, so we'll go over those later. Merry Christmas, everybody. I don't know if I'll have another podcast before Christmas. I hope so. I hope to have two more before Christmas, but this is the end of the backlog, so now it's time for more guests. If you have any suggestions, send me a message. Thank you to everybody that lets me know. Sorry, I got a lot of feedback on that last episode that the volume was low. Sorry about that Aaron Evans episode with a low volume. You could turn it up in the middle, but I know how that is. So I think this episode is going to have perfect volume, perfect pitch. We're sitting at the Funny Bone condo, so we're just kind of hanging out. So there's probably some ambient sounds. But anyway, it's a great episode. It's probably my favorite episode. Thank you also for all the feedback on the Doug Morgan episode, which you guys really love. And I know how much you hate Doug Morgan, so that was a victory. That was a victory. I'm trying to rip this intro off as fast as possible because I'm about to drive to Dayton. I'm in Chicago now. I'm about to drive to Dayton. I have a game tonight where I coach a U13 soccer team. We're undefeated, 4-1. Got a game tonight and another game on Sunday. Then I'll be driving back to Chicago. So I'm getting ready to head to town. And I'm trying to update my GPS. I've had this GPS for 4 years. And I finally just bought new maps for it. And it told me it was going to take 4 hours to download them and another hour to upload them. Currently it says I'll be able to leave in 36 minutes, which is about the threshold. I can't disconnect this device until it's ready. However, I could drive. I don't need GPS to get home. But this is the updated one, so like, why wouldn't I take it, right? Thanks to our sponsors. Just got a new phone through Republic Wireless. It's the Moto E. It's the economical version. And it's a great phone. My Moto X broke. I put it in my back pocket and sat on it and cracked the screen. It didn't crack the screen externally, but internally, so I couldn't read it. About 4 days, I went through my phone dying, and it was had various abilities of being used to, like, the last 2 days not being able to be used. And ordered a phone, came the next day. It was less than 24 hours, and it was at my front door. So that was awesome. Thank you, Republic Wireless. Thank you, UU Shirts. I've got all my orders in. My new merch is in. I can't wait to see how that works. They look great. And my team uniforms came in. Everything came in with about a week of each other. And, yeah. My dishes are done. The house is clean. Groceries have been bought for my wife who comes home in a couple days. And just waiting for this damn GPS to upload. And while I'm waiting for that to upload, I'm going to be uploading this episode of the podcast. This is episode 15 with Jay Snyder. Thanks for listening. Look, man, That's the sound of the place breaking, if you're listening. Sitting here with Jay Snyder, and we're going to record a podcast. You just got back from the sports banquet. That seemed like it took about 7 hours.
I was there from 5:15 to 9:45.
And it's not because you play a high school sport.
Wait, 8:45. Damn, I thought I was there like 4 hours.
No, it's not even 9:45 yet. It's about 9:40.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a golf coach. Got a hell of a golf program over here in southwestern Ohio. Chloe plays volleyball, so whenever show her some love.
Yeah, you know, in case she turns out to be yours. You know, you don't want to be like...
Or the other way. I'm like, see, look, I'm not your dad, but look, you got something to fall back on,
true,
you know?
True, a lot of those kids... So I was a coach. I was a three-sport athlete every year of high school except for one.
And hold on, can I guess the sports?
Go ahead.
Okay. Soccer.
Yeah.
Cheerleading.
That was...
You probably would be...
On the side. I did that competitively, but it wasn't for the high school.
No, it'd be soccer, basketball, tennis. I think you told me this one time, actually, already. I would have guessed the basketball one, no doubt about it.
But I only didn't play basketball for 1 year because I really didn't get along with the coach. And other than that, it's been basically soccer and tennis are the two things that I could probably go back to, you know, pick up, you know, I can go play today. You know, if I had the right equipment with me, I don't need 6 months to train to go do it. But basketball, if I had to go play basketball right now, it would not be a pretty picture.
Fucking kill you.
People would be like, why is he wearing cleats on the basketball floor?
The whole time, like, oh my God, I would love to see him dance.
Yeah.
If this is how he plays basketball, I'd love to watch this motherfucker dance.
Yeah, that's, I was like the, I think my junior, I think it was my senior year, I was like the second highest scorer on the team. With probably the least amount of basketball knowledge and skills, but raw athleticism and the fact that I was in excellent shape coming right out of the soccer season.
And fucking 6'8" to boot.
But here's the thing. In high school, we didn't win. Of my high school, of my whole basketball career, I never played on a winning team.
Is that right?
Never. I mean, when I say not a winning team, I mean like a team that never... won. It wasn't like we didn't have a winning record. It was like 0-16
or however many games you play.
Games they let us play.
No, that's me too. I've never been on a winning team, and I'm so much of a loser. I can't even pick a winning. My fantasy teams aren't even winning teams. It just, you know,
I think maybe in my whole career I've won two basketball games.
And can you really call that a career?
I like to because I've definitely retired from it, but I never got paid to play, so I guess I can't really call it a career, you know. But I did have some of the worst coaches I've ever had in basketball, and some good ones. But one coach one time when I was in seventh grade, he called a timeout, and he said, he's like, come on, come over here, get in the huddle. I just called a timeout to let you know that the other team's parents are making fun of you. Okay, get back out there. That's all I got. That's all I got.
Are you kidding me?
You had zero faith in us. And it wasn't like...
Oh, I thought he was talking to you specifically.
No, all of us. I guess it was like... it was like we were like the Washington Generals, and whoever we played were the Harlem Globetrotters.
Right.
Just the white version, because most of the teams we played were like really country bumpkin kind of teams. But that's Yellow Spring sports, man. Shit, you had to play... It wouldn't have surprised me if we had had a girl on our team, because
like a leader, the leader of the
point
team.
Guard, because she's got a lot of spirit. No, we did have some really exceptional female athletes at our school. We won track every year for like 17 years in a row or something like that.
I thought somebody bitching about somebody being in the handicap spot.
No. Well, I mean, what are they going to do? Beat you up?
I'll just hawking up real quick and just fucking...
I can't believe we're getting this much attention. There's a panel on the TV that we're not listening to of people talking about Charlie Sheen having the HIV.
I've never seen it coming out of
him. He's just such a wholesome boy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's probably been HIV positive so long that for the he said he's had it 4 years. I bet for the last 4 years he comes teardrops. He's got it so bad. It's just, you know, which as we all do.
Well, you know, just like someone said, just like Magic, you know, Magic Johnson magically made his AIDS basically disappear with money, and Charlie Sheen has definitely got enough money.
Oh, he's got the money. Yeah, and fucking. What, 25 years after Magic John? Magic had to buy it, do it when it was all...
Yeah, experimental.
Experimental.
Yeah, Magic paved the way. They were like, we call it the Magic Foundation. They literally invented magic.
Now that's, yeah, that's... Ta-da! but talking about the sports bankers, I want to mention the... About the one guy that the soccer coach was up there, and he says, and he's just saying everything backward or whatever. At one point, it must have been a different coach because the one girl came up and he goes, "She's worked hard all year. She's made goals. She hasn't met any of them, but she's been working hard." And then the other coach goes. He starts stuttering. And he's trying to say from a coach's aspect, but he goes from a coach's ass port. Oh, it was hilarious.
Because we all have, you know, our own personal ass ports that we like to view.
What was the other one? Shit, there was one more. It was the best one. That's why I saved it for the last.
Damn you. You'll remember it in 15 minutes.
The coach is like, oh, this guy, he's getting the MVP award. He goes, he may not be shocked, but I am. And I can't tell if he was doing this shit on purpose or if he was just an asshole, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, probably more of a jerk. I was talking to this guy from my hometown, Jason Shea. And he was like an athlete and a coach from Yellow Springs. And like a better than average athlete, you know. I don't know his whole story, but I know he was a top tier athlete. And he's always in the coffee shop. So he's like the type of dude that should have a podcast. And he'd be like, what would I talk about? And I'm like, I don't know, but you got the voice to talk about something.
Sound like that motherfucking homeless son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. This dude's like that, except... uberly successful. Clearly, he's retired at a much younger age than most people. But he was talking about the ego of the kids, like, being blind to the fact that they're not good. You know, like, you tell a kid, like, he wants to start, and you're like, look, you're not good enough to start. And he's like, what? Remember last week in practice when I threw that shot off the bank? He's like, when your back was turned to the basket, and you just threw that Hail Mary, like, before practice even started? Like, that... That's not accuracy. That's not what we're looking for.
Yeah, I understand Will Smith did it in the opening of Fresh Prince, but that's not what we're looking for here.
That's not the game. But, like, at the age, he was coaching for the school, and I coach soccer, like, on a private end. So it's like, I got to choose the players that play on my team, and when you play for the school, you, like...
You get what's left the kids that can't play on the private team.
Yeah, essentially. So I thought about how lucky I was, and I had a rough practice this last week because I was actually like, it's like 13 year olds. It's like a perfect storm of not being able to get kids to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And we're outside, and our next practice is in a really small gym, and you can't even get more than like 6 people on the floor. I mean, the gym is so small. It's a basketball gym, and half court is literally like a high school's 3-point line.
Where was this at? At the fucking rec hall at the county jail?
Yeah. Yes. Denzel was there shooting hoops practicing for his next movie. It was, he let his afro grow out. Looked like this microphone. But, yeah, no, I think it's awesome to, like, that they have these sports banquets and stuff like that to recognize the kids, but it gets a bit ridiculous. It's like open mic for these coaches.
Oh, yeah. The one guy, he was about to start crying, thinking, last but not least, I just want to thank my wife and my children for being there. And I was counting. He was, I started counting, and then I stopped counting because I was getting stressed on how many times he'd say, you know, because he wouldn't know. He was just winging it like most of them were.
Right, right. And, didn't prepare anything.
Yeah. And so he just kept saying, you know, a lot of times these, you leave and you kiss your, kiss them on the head, and you know, you go home and you, you know, you, you know, kiss them in the head again because they're already laid down. So I just wanted to thank her for that. And I think he was expecting a slow.
Yeah.
And it was nothing. Everybody's just like, yeah, motherfucker, we've been here 2.5 hours.
Wrap it up. I got a full belly. I need something to drink.
Most of the parents are just like looking around, like, you know, where the smoking area is at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there were other parents out tailgating, you know. They were
tailgating the banquet.
The dads that ain't allowed around their kids was just out tailgating.
There's a 300 yard line for the dads that have restraining orders. What I noticed the last sports banquet I went to, I think the last sports banquet I went to, my head coach from my high school, who had, I think, been coaching pretty much continuously, was retiring. So I was like a mess. I think it was the last good cry I've had. and it was rough because he's like a real stoic kind of a dude. And then, but I noticed the parents that had, they also eliminated the food from ours.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because
so there's absolutely nothing to guarantee the parents are going to bring the kids at that point.
No, it was literally like, and they're like, they ask you to stay for all, the whole thing because it's much more streamlined now.
Right.
But there were some parents that were like, you could tell that they got there early so they could sit very close to the door.
Right. Yeah. Well, my kid plays fucking golf. I'm not sitting out here for the 4 hours of football.
Right. That's
you
that's
guys are
the
doing
thing.
Our shit.
Yeah.
You guys are doing our shit like they do in the fucking the Emmys or whatever, where it's not even the televised ones. They do yours during the commercial break.
Yeah, the one that airs on public access. That was what happened at the last one, though. The golf coach had the most to say.
Oh, is that?
Yeah, and he had the fewest players.
It was horrible. So I guess the first part of ours was just giving out the MVP, all the kind of the special awards or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then for the individual stuff, you know, we went to our own little sale.
That's nice, though. That's nice.
Yeah, it was great. All the parents were just like, let us get, because we know we're there for volleyball, so we know once we get away from you assholes, we're 20 minutes heading down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and volleyball is like, what, that's five, six players on the court?
Six, yeah.
So then, what, you got six on the bench?
Nah, there wasn't even that.
Really?
Yeah, no. And we started having a pretty good team, but...
How'd they do in the tournament?
I don't know, they got beat immediately, but... Okay.
Yeah. Like Bengals fever.
Yeah, right, but they did good. They, you know, I was proud of it.
That's good shit.
But when I was a kid, I remember I wanted to. I played basketball and stuff in elementary school, and then as soon as I got to middle school, that's when I started getting into the drugs and pills and shit like that. So
what, like what age specifically?
10, 11. Yeah. So
I feel I was 13, so I feel enormously better.
Nah, hell, I had felonies by then. Yeah. No, not really. I didn't get a felony until I was 15. I don't want you to think I was a late bloomer, all right? So I never wanted to do anything. Then finally I was like, you know, I'm going to wrestle in school. So then I go down to I guess this would have been right around the same time. So I probably wanted to wrestle when I was about 11 or 12. So when I was about 10 or 11, we were... at the city pool or whatever, and you know, just cussing like that. But me and a couple of buddies are sitting on a bench in front of the kiddie pool, and just like our backs are to the kiddie pool, and we're looking at the regular pool, but we're just fucking. You know, I have a horrible mouth the way it is, so you know.
But at that age, you don't even know how to. Cuss
you don't even
yet.
Know how to do it, so you're, you know, it's horrible, whatever. And this fucking guy just leans up and grabs me by the back of the hair and just pulls my head back, and I was like, I was going. What the fuck? What the fuck? And he's And he just pulled my head back and he goes, "Watch your mouth around these kids." And so I just started screaming, "Get the fuck off of me! Get the fuck off of me!" And he fucking yanks my head one good time. I start crying like crazy. Well, come to find out, it was the wrestling coach. It's the wrestling coach, right? So a year or two later, I wanted to wrestle, so... and we go down into the locker room, and this son of a bitch walks in, and he goes, "All right, everybody, strip down your underwear. It's time to weigh in." And I didn't wear underwear that day, right? Whoa. So I'm just like, "Oh, fuck. I ain't got hair on my dick yet." Son of a bitch over there has a beard. All right, I was like, "Some was like, yeah, this ain't you know." So then I just grab my jacket and I start walking out. And he stops, stands right in front of me. He goes, "Where are you going?" I go, I don't think this is a good idea. And he goes, "What's wrong? What are you, a faggot?" His exact words. And I was like,
"It's just what you want to hear."
And I go, "No." But then I started crying again, so no one believed me. So, I must have been a crier. But anyway, so I walk out of there, pull out a can of Hawken I stole from the Save Lot, put a big chew in, light up a Marlboro.
To confirm your man.
Just, ain't no queer. Now where the hell did I put my knife and shit?
Got some woodland to do.
And so I walked out of there knowing... there's no more sport.
I think for me, what it was when I was in California, it was in seventh grade in California with my dad. And this was weird because, like, when I was in seventh grade, my curfew was midnight on the weekends.
Mine wasn't even that late when I ran away.
I was like, that's not even like the law's curfew for me is like 9 p.m.
Yeah, street lights.
And my dad is a child psychiatrist. Right. So I was like, well, he knows. You know, he's got to know. And I didn't get into any real trouble ever there. I did some, like, probably some minor vandalism because I was a skateboarder. And I think that was the first time I ever, like, smoked weed when I was there. But that kind of turned me in a direction towards, like, an alternative. I was more like a straight and narrow kind of would have played soccer when I got back to Ohio.
Right.
But the transition was rough until I started playing basketball in eighth grade, which was like, we didn't win a single game. That was when the coach was like, "Oh, call the timeout to tell us that they're making fun." And
you know, everybody's laughing, making fun of you guys. All right, put it in.
Hit a bulldog on three. And that's what straightened me back out. Not so much that I was like perfectly straight, because it was like I was kind of like going like
in weaving and out. Weaving in
and out. Yeah, because I would definitely like, I was definitely known as like one of the party kids. Because like, I don't know what it was, but I always had older friends. So when I was a freshman, I was friends with a lot of seniors on the soccer team. And my very first soccer game as a freshman, I started because the other goalie was injured. So it was like I was out there with guys, but they were like, they had no confidence in me. Right. I was a freshman, had never played a high school game before. But at the same time, like, I knew them all relatively well. So I had access to parties and stuff like that way younger than most of my friends. And I couldn't even like bring my friends there.
Right.
Because they were like,
they weren't in the loop.
They just weren't.
Oh, yeah.
That's acclimated. What I think. It's just like in comedy. You know what I mean? Like when you see somebody, so like if you're opening for somebody who's famous and they can't shut the fuck up, they don't know. Like Bert Kreischer said, he was like, if you're worried about how much, if you're talking too much and you're around people that are more famous than you, then talk half as much as you want to.
Right.
That's probably, if you're conscious of it, you're probably already not talking. You're probably okay. Right. But if you want to be certain, talk half as much as you think you should and you'll probably be fine.
Oh.
And that's what it was like. That's what high school socialization is like from freshman to
to junior year. And then once you're a junior, you're kind of like, these are my fucking young kids. You know, you start like...
They have no fucking clue.
Just like you are in fifth grade about the third grader.
Right. Yeah. It never stops.
Crying because they're out of chocolate milk.
It never stops until you graduate. And then when you graduate, you still show back up there. Just to let them know. Yeah. You don't have to be there.
I just thought I'd come and see if they still had my yearbook.
You see this bitch... Dude, I saw that on the news today. This bitch grabs this other woman at Walmart at the counter just by the head of hair and just throws her down like a baseball
bat. What?
It was glorious, but enough about.
Man, I had this thing where I wasn't shopping at Walmart. And
it's hard.
It's hard. But
the Midwest? Shit.
Yeah, well, it wasn't because like of some sort of like religious conviction about the ethics or anything like that. It was just like I was tired of going into places where... I get exactly what I wanted, but came out feeling worse about myself. You know, like I pay less than I wanted to, get exactly what I wanted, and be like, I feel dirty.
Still feel like you've done something wrong.
Exactly. So I was just like, I'm not going to go there. In fact, the last time I really went there was the time at the same location that the boy John Crawford got shot at the Beaver Creek Walmart. Right. So then it was kind of like, well, that's my sign, because I knew I felt dirty when I left it that day. And then that thing happened like a couple hours later. And I was thinking, that dude looks just like how I looked when I was 18. And I mean, like with the dreads and everything. I
think he looks just like you do now.
I can't tell you don't have hair. I don't see color.
Love your work in Precious.
It's gone downhill from there.
But at the 1 year anniversary at that Walmart you're talking about when he got shot, there was bunch of people, and they had they were picketing and everything and all that stuff, and there was somebody who had a laser out in like the end of the parking lot, maybe even across the street, and they were shining on the side of the store and it said like John Crawford was killed here or some shit like
and so
I never saw that, but somebody told me about my father-in-law told me about it because they were in town, so huge letters or whatever. But then we're going to, you know, over by the mall or whatever, and we see all these cops just, like, gearing up. Like, ready for shit to go down. I mean, there's an ambulance, three or four police cruisers, you know, and I'm, you know, just around the corner, you know, and they're just getting their shit on. Like,
battle gear.
Like,
That's
this
crazy.
Time maybe we'll be able to kill 12 of them. I was like, look at these motherfuckers.
Well, it's one of those things that... I get why they can't convict any of these cops. I mean, nobody wants to say it, but the real reason is once you start convicting these cops, it's a slippery slope, you know, because really the only thing the police are really there for is to keep the military from having to step in. The cops' number one job is protect rich people.
Yeah.
And then that's really it, kind of. You know what I mean? It's almost like everybody is policed, and if you get caught up in that and you've got enough money, the rules just don't apply. It's not, you can buy your
way out. You think it matters? You think money matters with the police?
Dude, when my poker club got raided, it was the only thing they had on their mind.
Cash?
Whatever. Like, I told, and what's funny is I told my buddy, he was like, what do you think's going to happen? It's not that big a deal. I said, the first thing that's going to happen, the only thing I got wrong about my prediction about how it actually went down was that they didn't draw their guns. They just walked in.
Really?
Nobody drew a gun. Yeah. But I said they're going to come in, you know, everybody on the floor. But they did make them get on the floor.
Okay, they wasn't watching Harlem Nights all night and shit.
Dude, they had the TVs off the wall. They had all the chips. They had all the cash. They had all of that shit in their van before they even touched anybody that was on the floor. And
right?
Check their pockets. And my buddy's so dumb. They didn't know where he lived. And so they took him home. They're like, well, we'll drive you by your house if you want to, you want to drop off any of your stuff, personal effects or anything like that. And so when they stopped by the house, they walked in with him and they were like, okay, we're going to need to seize this computer. We're going to need to seize this and this. And he had $1,200 in his pocket. And they got it when they processed him. He could have left it in his kitty litter box. He could have just left it in the drawer in his bathroom when he went to take a leak. But nope, they got that too. And really, all he got in the end, because he didn't contest it, was a $50 fine.
No shit.
But if you
plus all of his losses.
Well, see, it was also like a massive. It wasn't massive, but it was like there was two other poker rooms operating, and they got those two. They busted both of those at the same time, and one of the guys lost like a Cadillac. One of the guys, the partner that I sold my share to, had a BMW that they impounded but didn't keep because he didn't own it. So they, you know, the bank owned it. Right. So. But he had been, like, I think selling, like, really minor amounts of weed. But he was, like, very diligent with his record keeping. And I think also he was doing some stuff with some pills. So when they knew where he lived, so they raided his house while he wasn't there. They searched all of his roommate's stuff. They took his safe out, his computer. They found all kinds of crazy stuff on his computer.
Holy shit.
And, yeah, but I think he had money. I think he came from... I think he claimed to not have money, but I think he came from a pretty well-to-do family, or at least a family that had something.
Right.
And I've seen him. He's come to see me do comedy since then in Cincinnati. In fact, his
paid
name was...
Paid tickets?
Since, yeah, you know he paid to get in. He paid to get in. And but it was weird because it was from such a former life, you know, like... Right. Like that, like when the police raided the club, that was the end of poker as I knew it for right. me, basically. And so I had already sold, yeah, I'd already sold my share. But the funniest part about it all is my buddy that I was in business with is still a rounder. I mean, he's not hosting games that often, but he's still, like, that's his every day. Is right. up and down $1,000 every time I see him or talk to him. Man, I lost $1,700 last night. Oh man, I'm up about 5 G's right now. And it's like one of those things where it's like, if you were to like assess the losses and gains or whatever, it's like, it couldn't be good.
They're all way more losses.
I just have to assume. Otherwise, it's like you slow down at some point. For me, at least, whenever I won more money, I slowed down and played better games instead of like when I was. Down, I would play a lot of small games. When I was up, I'd play big one game.
Right.
You know, get
a better game.
Practice and then get ready for this big game, this big tournament or something. But he's like a thrill seeker. He's like, he'd jump out of planes for sports if you could get some money possibly for it. But, you know, love him to death. Great guy. He's going to be a dad. He's like a Doug Morgan. I interviewed Doug Morgan on the podcast.
Did you?
Yeah, he had
Doug.
This,
you have to say.
It was real authentic Doug. You know,
sometimes. Oh, that's the worst.
It's a groaner.
I hate when he don't put on a fucking facade.
A facade. That's the first time I ever tried to film anything with Jonathan and Jer when Jer was first getting into the videography. Doug, we were trying to film some sketches, and Doug could not resist breaking into material.
Right.
That already wasn't working. You know what I mean? It was like... But we didn't talk about comedy at all, really. That's what I think was the best part of that podcast. I don't think we talked
about it.
Didn't want to
make it weird, uncomfortable for him.
I didn't want him to, you know... He was talking to a comic, and it was weird.
He was already had...
to
know,
contend with that.
Yeah, he was already had starstruck eyes, you know.
What I found in the last couple podcasts that I've done with people that haven't aired yet is... I got to know them in a way that made me say when I was done, I get it. Right. I get it.
What they're doing.
I get what you're doing. I get where you come from in a way that I wasn't getting it before.
Yeah, this ain't going to be one of those podcasts.
Yeah, no. I get you into faggot. Which is cool. The Doug, and we did it at Second Shelf.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, at the thrift shop. And so he was, like, interacting with customers and cutting deals and stuff like that. And
you know, free mesothelioma with every...
every purchase.
Yeah, dude, he's...
He's come a long way. He's breaking... Have you seen him perform for the urban crowd yet? Have you seen him do well in the urban room?
Yeah, I've seen him do well with them a couple years ago. So I can imagine he said he's chiming in on it. And that's what he likes. What he likes to do.
I think it's important to know what you like in comedy, you know, or know where you're successful,
right.
What kind of crowd you're successful with. And I think that's probably the number one fear that you can get in your head. It's for like a goalie, it would be like, he can't dive to his left. right. You know, shoot to his left, he won't die.
It's his weak spot. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, that's what it's like in comedy, because like, I have a, I wouldn't say a fear, but there's definitely a different gear, a more unpracticed version of my act when it is in a mostly urban room.
Yeah.
Oh, it's much more aggressive.
It's intimidating. Why is that?
I think it's just because
Because they don't fucking know free laughs, or that's the...
Well, they
that's another stereotype you guys get.
Yeah. We're all hilarious. I think that's actually kind of accurate. I think most black people...
No courtesy laughs.
Yeah, you got to prove something to me right away. And unless I already know you from something, there's really no respect. Like, I remember I went to do this show for... I was filming it for Mark Paramore. Mike Paramore. Yeah. And he's come a long way, too, man.
Oh, he's killing a fucking beast, right now. Yeah.
But these... It was like a church crowd. And the church crowd was aggressively, like... This dude was asking me, I was sending him, is this even going to be funny? And I was like,
yeah, probably not to you.
Yeah, I was like, but then when I saw him laughing, I was like, wow. Because I definitely, it wasn't from my part of that act. They made me go up first because somebody bailed out. And I was like, I'll go, but this isn't really like.
Yeah.
It was pandery. It was so bad that it was almost like, I didn't even know. Like, if I had to do it
is
again.
That worst bomb?
No, I've definitely bombed worse than that. What? But it was like one of those situations where it was like, I was in Columbus. I was at the Columbus Funny Bone. So it was like, and it wasn't that packed. The show did get going very well. And by the time Mike went up, he fucking crushed it. It was I felt like it was a great video. And it was so horrifying for me. I felt so out of place, and I just and
scared.
I don't.
Like, yeah, fucking scared.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I think what it is that I have now is I don't give a fuck.
I don't care if you like me or not.
I've seen it. I've just been through too much at this point to really have what's going on out there affect what's going on the stage. You know what I mean? Like I can ice it down. Not to say that I'm such a good performer. My jokes probably all suck, you know, when I do that. But I found, I'd say just in the last year, the ability to do material that's so far out of my comfort zone that when it's not going well, I don't just bail on it. You know what I mean? It's like, you're too far.
Commit.
Yeah, yeah, you got to commit to the
weirdness. And
you need
to fill the time right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that you got weird in 3 minutes.
Remember
and you got 6 minutes
when set. You first start and you've got... You think you've got 20 minutes, and then you go up in front of a rough crowd, and you go through all your material within like 6 or 7 minutes. And when you realize that you're on your last joke, that fucking feeling that sets in, it's just like...
It's like waking up on a raft that's losing air. And you can't see land anywhere. You're like, I was just catching some salt on the beach.
Yeah, I was just there having a great time. What's your worst bomb?
My worst bomb, Cleveland Improv.
I think a lot of people might say that.
And this is what's so bad is, I'd been there and I bombed once before. I went up. Doc sent me up there to do a contest for Lee, who's the manager there, and it was for Comedy Central was doing like a.
Oh, it's the next. Who's next?
Who's next? Something like that. It was just, yeah. I never even saw it on TV or anything. I heard about it anywhere from Comedy Central. But
Ali Sadiq ended up winning it.
Really? That makes sense. Anyway, it was basically like if Doc had done it, you know, he probably would have done it slightly more democratic. Probably would have drawn a lineup, like draw numbers, and this will be the lineup. But it was pretty clear that this one guy was going to win. Based on the fact that he went last and he was heads and tails better than most of us. People were there to see him.
Right.
And then all of us came from other places. So Reese was there from Toledo Funny Bone.
Right.
And Kelly Collette was there. That was the first time I ever really got to talk to her at length. We actually, you know, like, you know, you see someone as beautiful as Kelly Collette and you think like, there's nothing there. But we actually had a very substantive conversation that endeared me to her comedy in a different way about that whole experience, because it was very surreal. It was a full house, and I didn't do very well. And Reese said something at the end of it. He was like, even though I know that there's no possible chance, I still feel like there's a chance. I was like, this is a contest. And I was like, I couldn't have said it better myself. He's like, I hate that feeling of telling yourself there's no chance and the other part of you that says, well, there's always a chance. And the guy that was slated to win won. But Lee, the manager, was like, look, you know, it was kind of a stacked audience against you and everyone was here to see the one guy. So I'll give you a shot if you want to come up and do a one night or whatever, see what you got or whatever. So he gave me a shot and I came back a couple weeks later and did an MC gig for Rod Paulette headlined.
Right.
And he did well. Closed strange, but did very well. And the middle guy is the regular house MC guy. I can't remember his name, but he's does well there. White guy, but he's kind of rough. You know, he's aggressive. Right. And I opened and bombed. And I didn't think I bombed. I thought I did okay. And and so I watched the video the next day, and I was like, yeah, that went pretty well. Yeah. And then I sent him an email a couple weeks later saying, yeah, so the last show went pretty well. What do you think about giving me another spot? And he was like, yeah, I watched the tape. I didn't think the last show went very well. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go watch it again. And I watched it again. And it was the horror. Oh, my God, dude. I filmed from the back of the room, and it was crickets. At one point, somebody walks up to the assistant manager and says, how's he doing this time? And he's like, And he's like, not any better. And then, like, somebody, you could tell somebody points at the camera, but it picked up the audio. Crystal clear. So it was almost like,
no.
In case I didn't know, now I knew that. And so,
and I know you guys did it on purpose, all right?
and so that was very humiliating. So I sent him an email back and I said, you know, I watched it again. And I said, this is strange because I watched it the first time and felt like, genuinely, it felt like it went okay. And I watched it the second time and I'm so embarrassed.
It's hard to send you this email.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I even said that. I can't even believe you're even talking to me at this point.
Chances are you have my web address flagged and you'll never get this email. But
yeah. But he gave me another shot. And I went up and I opened for Phillips.
Jay.
Jay Phillips. Yeah. And awesome. Oh my God, he's a beast.
Yeah.
And Steinberg was the middle.
Nice.
And I was having a good conversation with Steinberg, but when I came off, he was like, man, you're up there, you just look so scared. And I was like, I was, you know, I was like, I'm fucking eating my balls every time I've ever been here, and that's the best I've ever done. And it was still not that good.
Still wasn't sending an email over this one.
No, it was basically like, you know what, you can come back here once you've figured it out. But clearly you haven't figured it out,
like, even as a guest.
Yeah. And which was strange because I felt like at that point I wasn't featuring anywhere yet or anything, but at that point I thought I had figured out the MC game, but I realized that it, you know, you never really figure it out. You never figure out the audience. You figure yourself out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what it was. It had nothing to do with being the Cleveland Improv. I've played rougher crowds since then, but it was one of those things where going first in a urban setting
is always hostile.
You got to come out. I don't know who it was, but he opened for who's a big guy, super big guy,
Lavelle.
Yes,
Ralphie.
Yeah, Lavelle. He opened for Lavelle, and it was a 2-man show, and he like started off doing open mic status kind of stuff, and people were kind of like, but by the time he finished, people. They could have been like, Lavelle's not going to be here, but, you know, that's the show. And people would have been like, damn, that was almost worth our money.
Right.
You know, they would have been disappointed. But people were like standing up and like, what? The feature act damn near gets a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And it was because of the way he paced himself. He started off with like, almost like, I don't even know if I trust this guy. and then slowly built their trust. And then took them places that they couldn't even imagine. It was like a creature.
Jumping in the middle.
Exactly. Instead of coming out, and that's what Lee said to me, and I didn't really get it at the time. He said, "This is a sophisticated audience. You need to give them a little bit of romance before you stick it in." And I was like, I don't even know what that means. You know what I mean? Like at the time, and I think I do now, but even still, it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm not emailing them because I don't need them. I'll go there when I'm a feature, and I think that'll buy me enough respect. But also, I've grown up as an MC, and I probably was wearing a jacket. I probably looked sharper than I actually felt or looked mentally, like physically, my face. It's intimidating sometimes when you're in a big room like that.
Right, I've never been to one room I haven't played.
It's weird because it's like this table, and that it's like the opposite of Zany's downtown, which is like a long shoebox straight down this way. This one's like laid out like this, and the stage is in the middle. So you really got to look left and look right, and the thinnest spot is right in the middle, but it's still thick because it does go back right there.
Right,
it seats a lot.
My worst bomb. There's two that it's tied for, but the. One, my twin brother was still doing comedy, and we go, a friend hits us up, probably MySpace or something at that time, and he says, "Man, my sister has cancer, can you guys do a little fundraiser?" We're like, "Yeah, absolutely." And so we're going down, this is our homecoming show now, right? We're comedians, we're doing it. We get there, it's at the local park under a shelter house, and Jared goes up first, and he was always way more vulgar than what I am.
Right. So was he funnier? Who was funnier?
Come on, bro.
All right. I had to ask.
He is.
Yeah.
But, so
I see the wink. All right.
So he goes up, and our stage was just the sidewalk walking into the... There's, just a...
The rents is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just real fancy setup, right? So he's up there just talking about kids eating asshole nowadays and shit like that. And at one point, this old man and woman...
For a cancer benefit.
Okay. So at one point, this old man and woman... And this is like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday or something. Sunday, maybe. So this old man and woman, no exaggeration, late 70s, get up and they're just, it takes them a month of Sundays to finally get down to him where they're walking, but he's walking them.
Yeah.
Just taking a long time, right?
Gotta hear so the whole thing.
They get right up to him, right? And then the old man puts his finger in his face and he goes, "You need to watch your mouth around those kids." And then I was like, "What? Fucking kids here? You're wrestling coach?" And so Jared's just like, he goes, "Yes, sir." And the guy they leave. And the whole time I'm like, oh, holy shit. And this is same thing when I think that I've got a half an hour and
right.
I'm about to find out that I got about 12 minutes.
When no one's laughing, it's a lot less.
Jared goes short, of course. So then I go up there and I'm just kind of trying to like make fun of our old probation officer who's a business owner in town also and just trying to do some local stuff just because I know it's about to run. Finally, I start going into the materials. And I remember one.
And this is outdoors?
It's outdoors, yeah.
Do you have microphones?
We have a microphone. It's just like.
Are people sitting in the grass?
People standing in the grass. And they're,
oh, God.
And so.
And your level, eye level.
Eye level, yeah. Just in case they charge you, right? And so, just like going to like a little shelter house at a party. It's full of picnic tables.
Sure,
so everybody is at the picnic tables and then around to the left here. And we're just standing there with the mic. And it's probably like a karaoke machine or something. And so I'm up there. And then finally, one of the jokes that I did was, I go, "You guys are just sitting there." Oh, I go, "How's it come when you ask somebody for baby powder, they automatically assume you're chafed, you know? I'm old-fashioned, goddammit. I just like the smell of the shit." And then I go, "How can you even look at somebody like they're chafed, you know? Unless they're Amish that was my big punchline. And they're just standing there, dude. Oh, and it was so uncomfortable. I squeak out another 10 minutes or so. Thank you guys so much. That's it. And then we just...
Did you merch?
No, we marched. So I hand him the mic. I walk to the left. Jared just joins me, and we walk straight to the... I didn't even stop. I didn't... Hey, thanks. Hey, good to see you. Just my walk off of the stage, or off of the stage area, was the beginning of my walk to the fucking truck. Nice. And so I went out to the 83 Dodge. Dude, we just got in there and I was like, that was not good. Not good at all. And the second one was Carla Britton. Did you ever do that? She had done at the Hamilton, like a music hall down in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And they got two cameras, two really nice cameras, and they're going to record a DVD for us, right? So we get there, it's me, John Craig, Henry Phillips, and Carla Britton. And I think there was somebody else.
Henry Phillips from Columbus?
Yeah. It's the first time I met him. And so, man, he goes up and actually did pretty decent. There were four people in the audience, all at one table.
Four people only?
Four people only. The audience was four people, yes. We had the same amount of... We brought the same amount of comics as they brought. Okay. And so...
So you had to sit in the audience.
Oh, yeah. And so... Oh, and they're like playing... The audience members. Two women, two men. The women are in dresses. Like gowns.
Uh-huh.
The men are bow-tied. Jacket.
Pentecostals.
Looking sharp. I mean, they're like, this is... Like, looked like they came from a wedding, right? And I'm like, what the... And they're older. Their bow tie is telling me that I'm not going to be their brand of comedy.
Right.
And so... And like, there's one of the guys is up, like, playing a piano, like, before the show, just, like, playing piano and shit. Anyway, Carla goes up, does all right. John goes up, does all right. Henry goes up, does all right. And I'm being very conservative... Actually, very liberal by saying they did all right. Yeah, okay, so, okay. I mean, it was a tough room.
And four so then, people, yeah.
Four, and so then I go up and I just, like, well, I'm just going to go to the crowd or whatever. Yeah. So I just take the mic and I go and I just pull a chair up and I sit down with them. Like, yeah, we're not,
yeah.
You guys ain't getting a real show. I mean, basically what I said. So I'm just trying to kick something up. It takes me about 2 minutes to realize we have nothing in common.
Yeah.
So then I just get up, go up to the stage, and I'm just... Just going through it. And I'm absolutely... I had the worst set of the night. No doubt about it. And the guy... At one point, I go, well, what do you guys want? And one of the camera guys hollers, something funny! I go, what else? What else? I don't have any of that.
That's the stock line.
And so... So then I go, you guys really don't like the vulgar stuff, do you? And they go... Oh, no, God, no. And I go, and I start laughing. I start giggling hysterically. And I just turn around and grab the mic, because I know what I'm about to do. So I just grab the mic stand, I put it down there, and I go, all right, then, I'll leave you guys with this. A father, a son, a mother, and a daughter walking to a talent agency. And, I mean, I just...
Wow.
You know how it goes.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I... I'm not holding anything back, right? And so Carla finally, she like comes and sits up front because they're, you know, 5 or 6 feet away from the stage. Carla sits right next to the front of the stage. And then I'm getting dirtier and dirtier. And she just looks up and she goes, ugh. She just growled at me. And I go, we good on time, Carla? She's like, yeah, we're good, Jay.
That's hilarious.
And then I start walking off and I go, oh shit, I forgot to pitch my shirt. And then I just went back on stage and grabbed my shirt and just left.
That's funny.
And I think they gave the DVD to John when he got his, and I was like, destroy it, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guarantee that son of a bitch still has it.
Oh, I'm sure it's in his file. Oh, dude. I'm sure he's got some YouTube
clips.
We did a show in Yellow Springs called Flock on the Block, and
really nice people put it on. I don't know if the charity is a real charity or anything like that, but we did it at the Gulch, which is like not the place to do comedy. It's got a pool table in the back and there's no place to set up a stage. So I built that soapbox 2.0 that John uses sometimes. It's literally some 2x6s and a piece of 3/4 plywood.
Right.
And 2x8s. 2x8s. I actually might have even used 2x10. But
is that tall?
It's probably 2x8s. And Salim was the headliner, I think. And it was a shit show for sure. There was maybe 200 people in there and maybe 10 of them trying to pay attention.
Ugh.
And so like there was just so much ambient noise. It was me, Mike Etchen was there, Nate Washington was there, Carla Britton was there, Salim.
I remember Kenny. I was going to do it, and then I had to bail on it.
Yeah, thank God.
I remember somebody was saying Chappelle's brother was going to be there. Something like that.
Nate walked in with his cousin, who happens to look like Chappelle, if Chappelle had gone the other way. Like, instead of putting on weight and looking more healthy,
right.
But like had gone into like a deep crack depression or something. Not to say that Nate's cousin is a crackhead, but he looks like Dave Chappelle if Dave Chappelle was a crackhead.
And so, I'll tell you this, I've never seen him, but he fits the stare or the profile.
I remember Carla, because I was kind of in charge, I was hosting it, so I was like going through it, I was like, all right, look guys, we're going to trim this down a little bit, and so everyone's going to do like 4 to 6 minutes, and Carla was like, I was told I could do 10 minutes, and I was like, okay, Carla, you can do 10 minutes if you want to do 10 minutes. But if you get up there and decide you also only want to do 2 minutes, I'll be right there. And the horror, dude. Like, I think Kenny Carpenter, like, was like, fuck y'all, and like walked out on it and stuff like that. He was trying to get some people to pay attention. He went behind the bar. He tried, but it was just... They weren't there for it, and it was also one of those things where it was like just so many people in the bar, and there was only like one or two bartenders, and so everybody's like wanting drinks and stuff, and right. So they're just like waiting for drinks, and it's no way to really sit and face the show. So the only people that paid attention to the show were the people that were like right up front, and the bar was, I've seldom seen it as packed as it was. And Salim went up and used the DJ to like spin some the DJ, you may have heard of him. His name is DJ Fatty Lumpkin.
Yeah, who hasn't?
Right. So he's probably a superstar now, but I just remember.
He does comedy too, but he goes by the name Biscuit.
Yeah. Fatty Lumpkin. And I think that's...
that might be an edit, bro.
He actually riffed on his name for a while and played some Chub Rock, and I think got the crowd going in his favor. And by the crowd, I mean like 15% of them. Right. But it was one of those things where it was like, oh, it was like you watched somebody who was not afraid. Because like today, given the same situation and I'm Salim, I'd be like, go ahead, close it out, young blood. You know what I mean? Right. Like I don't even go up and try to save the show or whatever. But Salim did. And better than most people could have, unless Dave Chappelle himself had walked in and said, hey, listen up.
Right.
I got a lot of people to pay attention to him for a second. And, that was the first time I realized that if you try to do a show in a bar on Friday night, it better be a paid show or in a small enough town where that's what they came to do.
Right.
And that was not what
they came to do. You're not taking up the whole bar. That's why the little side rooms are always good. Yeah. So if they want to go in, they can.
You ever do the Fox and Hound here?
Oh, yeah. I've ate it. That was always a tough son of a bitch, man.
I've crushed that room, and I've also, like, some of the worst bombs I've ever had in that room. Like, literally, I've done that show probably 8 times, and it doesn't happen anymore. It's kind of a shame, but it's also kind of a blessing, because it wasn't really conducive to comedy. They have another side room that's even bigger and easier to close off.
Right.
That would be better for comedy, but it's too much seating.
Oh, it's too much for, yeah. Yeah, that's always a weird one. That's just a weird setup. But it was a good room to...
For a free show?
For a free show. And they paid comics? Yeah, they paid decent. Yeah, but it was like a paid show, but you know you're going to fight.
Yeah.
Because the setup was just weird. The tall tables are in the middle of the room. The short tables are behind that.
Nobody was ever really there for the show. Yeah, it was always kind of like
they just sat there leftovers. Because, yeah.
Yeah, and Mike Canestero really did, I think, the best job with it because he did a good job of bringing in the right mix of people that would that were new enough that they would bring an audience.
Right.
And that made it more dynamic. And it was the first show I ever got paid on. I have a picture on stage. It was with my arm around Mike Canestero and Steve Mack.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was the first show I ever got paid on. It was also the first show. Like I had some, I was coaching at the time, and some girls that I coached came to the show, and it was not good. I was not funny. I mean, it was like the second or third show I'd ever really done.
Right.
And but I was really fearless at that point. You know what I mean? It wasn't. I was like, this wasn't good. But I realized at that point, like, you got to really pick your battles when it comes to the bring.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like in the early stages of having to bring people, they either have to be complete strangers that are interested in like, oh, well, yeah, we'd like to see some live comedy. That sounds interesting. Or like your endearing friends and family. You can't have those people that are like, you got to space it out. Because even now when people are like, I've still never seen you do comedy. And I'm like, good. By the time you do, I'll be a lot funnier.
Man, I'm coughing like hell. The in Cincinnati this week, there was some mutual friends that we have that came and they sat them right up front. And I mean right up front. And they might have been one of the only up front tables. I hate that shit, man.
Oh, when there's only one table sat up front?
Well, just when it's someone that I know right there that close. And just
like Nick Mathis? I guess that might be an edit.
It might be an edit, but yeah. Well, he's good. I'll.
Well, let's put it this way: when it's someone that you know, and I learned this the hard way, you know, because when I close with the knock knock joke or whatever, I have to go to the crowd. So I went to somebody that I knew one time. I may have even gone to somebody that I know twice on that, but and I'm by know I mean know well, and. And it works, but it's so cheaty, guilty feeling. Right. It's almost like a plan.
Set up, right.
I don't like it. So I really, when I do that joke, I am genuinely interested in the response of a stranger.
Right.
In the situation that I present it. So I find it awkward when somebody's sitting up front that, like, so I had one time this guy, he wasn't sitting right up front, but he was a guy that's in my classes at Wright State. And he was sitting close, but he was smiling the whole time and laughing. So I felt like I was having a good time. But I realized, like, if he wasn't, I would have been in my head about it, even if everybody else was laughing.
Right. Yeah, it's just, even if you know you're doing what, I just hate it. You know, it's weird. I hate the front row. The second row, not as bad. I still don't like that either, but I'd rather him just be out of sight.
Yeah. That's one thing that Wiley's always had going for it was that super, like, the light went to 11. It was like, fucking, you couldn't see.
Oh yeah, stairs. Batman's about to come jumping through this fucking wall here. Yeah,
I remember like going to bed and still having those fucking lights burned into my fucking. I still see them when I close my eyes. Like, good god. But man, that place turned around. I was in there today, and it almost looks like a completely different interior. They opened up the bar. You can go straight up to the bar and buy drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
He had
green room. Painted it.
Green room is actually
moved
decent.
Moved the stairs too. Around to the side. Yeah, like it should be. Yeah, yeah, it's the light. That light's not near as bright as it used to be. It's a fun room, man. It's a fun room.
That was the first room I did stand up in. What was the first room you did? What was the first club you ever did stand up in?
Funny Bone, Dayton Funny Bone.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the event?
They used to have a show called Future Legends of Comedy. That was their open mic night.
It should have been called Future Has-Beens of Comedy.
The way the Future open mic never was.
Yeah. Future people that are only going to do this for about
and
6 months.
At that time, Jack and Joanne were running it. And then.
At the Funny Bone?
Yeah, they ran it at the Funny Bone first. And then the corporate shut down the open mic because the numbers didn't
support it.
Stop coming in. So then they went over there. To Wiley's, but my first night it was Jack Wilson brought me up, and Ryan Singer closed it out. And it was awesome. Yeah. And then the second time
you did well.
Mm-hmm. And then the second
what'd
time
what'd you open with?
I don't even remember, dude.
You remember any other gyms?
It was something like
that. You're not still doing.
It was no, it's not. I don't want to. I don't want to ruin it.
Still using these, so I can't burn it on the air. But
what was it? One I started with. You guys have to bear with me. I'm still getting used to being in front of a crowd like this without a judge and jury present. And then just some dumb shit.
That's a kind of
thing. I know one of my biggest laughs, and it's the hackiest fucking thing now, but I said, but I, you know, I didn't know it was hacky. It was just, I thought, I was the only one that thought of this, whatever, but I said, I go, I've never, so I come out of like a low spot, and I say, I go, I've never seen a Mexican at Taco Bell, of like working there.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
And it just gets a huge laugh, and I think it was because whatever I said before that, it was just such a different direction, you know. It was just out of nowhere. I think it just caught them by surprise, and they started laughing their ass off.
That's funny.
I couldn't look up, and I would rock back and forth like this. I would just stand there and rock back and forth and look down at the ground. I used to like feel myself doing this.
Just rocking. What isolated that? What got you out of that?
Fuck it. I mean, it took forever. Yeah. And then, I mean, I still feel like I probably still do it. Just not as obvious.
It's not as obvious. Like, when you did it, I was like, I've seen that. But it's more like a kind of get, once, I think you become aware of it and you start moving.
Go to whatever direction you're leaning toward. Yeah. But
I definitely did some that rocking. I think I still do it from time to time. My way to kind of correct it is I'll either lean against the back of the wall, or I just get as close to the back wall as I can. Or if I leave the mic in stand, then it's not as bad.
Right.
The north compass.
Yeah, but I always...
In fact, I did that last set, the one I did for Doug out in...
Kania,
yeah. I did that the whole... like, it was only 25 minutes, but I did the whole thing with the mic and stand.
Is that right? I don't think I've ever done a whole...
I think that's the first time... I did like a 10 or 15 minute set one time at that Wexford on the Green show we used to do at the pool party.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were kind of rough sometimes, but this time I did the whole thing, and it was like the light was coming in on the microphone, so I was like leaning into the microphone, and I had the beer. I didn't want to touch anything. I had a cup of beer in my hand, and I literally just leaned in and crushed for about 10 minutes and then walked away under very, you know, normally that would have been a, no way that show goes well.
Right.
Under those conditions. And I think the next one they did didn't go well, but, they'd line the chairs up around the pool, and you get laughs, but they were so far away.
I did it once, and they had, like, half the chairs were on one side of the pool, half the chairs were on the other side of the pool, and you were, like, at the head of the pool.
Yeah, yeah, and there's some tables off the side. So then you have to
choose, like...
Yes.
So it's like, you're going back and forth, so it's
a
weird
setup. It was like a square horseshoe with clusters of some tables on both sides. Yeah,
but there were people there, and they were good, but this... I only did it one time, and this girl was heckling like crazy, and then so I get up there and I just start, you know, trying to tee off on her a little bit. And she's just taking it. And I'm getting big laughs with it. And I'm like, I'm running out of stuff to say to this bitch. She's about to win just because she's going to endure everything that I can say to her. And then out of nowhere, she comes up and she's like, let's shotgun a beer. I bet you I can beat you. I was like, all right, just... Now get in there and make me a sandwich. All right. It was rough, but something. Tyler Stewart. It was me, Doug, Tyler Stewart, and Josh.
Oh, I think I'm the one that sent Tyler Stewart in there.
Is that right?
Did he have a rough one?
Yeah.
That's what Josh said.
Yeah.
I thought he would be perfect for that.
I did too. I think he's hilarious, man. He's a lovable guy, but it's just a weird setup, and it's... It's just a weird. Just the ten people to the right were perfect.
How did everybody else do?
To the left were.
How really did Josh do?
I really don't remember.
Did he do the? It's one of those things. The memory fades with each show, blends together like sands through the hourglass. So are the.
I just remember what it paid. That's all. No, yeah, I think
there was a lot of free beer there. That's what I remember always doing.
Yeah, there was a lot of beer. And then they had like Budweiser representatives there.
That's
like,
what it was. It was like a beer tasting, and which was a pretty good model.
Yeah,
but it was just not the.
I mean, it would be better if they would put the mic on the one side and put everybody on the other side. I mean,
or that way, if they had a clubhouse that was big enough to sustain it.
Yeah.
But the, we did it indoors one time, and it was packed, but it was also a lot of fun because everyone was crammed in there. And right. It made it a lot of, like, made it very comedy-esque.
Yeah.
Instead of everybody being spread out, one person. It's like doing comedy at eye level, everyone's standing in the grass.
Oh, it's horrible. Oh, God, it's...
Who knows, and then your wrestling coach shows up, and you're like, "What?"
Oh yeah, you watch your mouth. Watch your mouth around them kids, dude. He had me a whole head of hair, buddy. Just, you can imagine the mullet I had. I mean, just putting, and it's like a bench. And I'm just like, you know, right. I'm seeing him. I'm trying to figure out who the hell it is from upside down. What?
That the first time I ever, like, my first, like, memory of, like, I knew I was cussing probably around second grade, but it was one of those things where it was, like, we weren't, like, I got a friend, my good friend Chase, he was the first person to ever call me on the phone, but he was, like, the first person I ever knew to had his own phone number. Like, he had his own line in his room.
Oh, right.
And it wasn't like he was wealthy or anything, it was just because he was always on the phone. This dude, like, he's one of those guys that,
he was making mixtapes and shit.
Smooth talker, yes. Yeah. Can sing. He's a smooth dude. And one of my best friends, he's in my wedding. You know, so he's one of my best friends. And he would call me on the phone and he would say, like, he'd be like, Dookie. You know what I mean? Like, we weren't, like, formulating sentences with cuss words. You know, we might work our way up to shit. But I remember just listening, like, all right, yeah.
I see where you're going.
And then I was probably in third grade and then my best friend Travis Wilson and his brother Andy Wilson lived right around the corner from me, and I played there every day. We were like best friends, and I couldn't even go past there anywhere else. Any of my other friends, I couldn't even get there without passing their house.
Right.
So it was like it was always a stop off on the way to go anywhere. And one day we were playing, and we're playing like hide and seek or something like that, and I had to tag Andy. And he, like, slammed the door in my face. And I was like, oh, shit, or something like that, or fuck, or something like that. And then their mom opened the door. And she was like, Adrian, we don't talk like that here. You need to go home. And so I went home and never went back. I remember it was like, that might have happened in the spring. And I think it was, like, in the fall. I was like riding my bike. I stayed away, you know, and this is before I was on the phone with him. I never talked to him on the phone. So I was riding my bike one day to go to another friend's house, a friend I didn't even like as much. And him and his family were all outside and I saw them and I was like, I tried to speed up so they wouldn't see me and get around the corner. And they were like, Adrian, come back. And I was like,
put your foot on the back of the wheel and just kick us.
And they're like, where have you been? We thought you moved away. And I was like,
no. You told me to go home.
And they're like, what? And I was like, I said a bad word and you told me to go home. And she was like, I didn't mean forever. I remember, dude, I was like, I think I cried. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was like homecoming.
Just jump off the bike when you're still going about 8 miles an hour and just take off doing them big strides.
It was, God, I remember it like it was yesterday. Like, you need to go home. Like, no dogs allowed.
Start walking by the Wonder Years theme song starts playing. What would I do?
And that was, they ended up moving away relatively soon after that. But, damn, that was like my first, like, you got to be careful. And then the other time I had a memory of cussing. I was a camp counselor right out of high school. I worked for this camp that I went to. Oh, I'll tell you this story. I went to, worked at this camp because I felt morally obligated to return the favor. I knew I had to go back and, like, return the favor. I had to go be a good guy because when I was at this camp, a good guy was my camp counselor. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he. So what happened was when I went to camp, I never took a shower the whole week. And, like, all the other kids were, like, fine with...
It
was
didn't cool. have hair on your...
I had hair. I wasn't a faggot, though. I was chewing skull and smoking cigarettes. I didn't take a shower.
Non-filters in Copenhagen.
You know what I'm saying? Got some snooze. It wouldn't have been as big of a problem. I don't think I was that stinky of a kid. The problem was that I also wet the bed every night.
Right.
And never washed the sheets right. or anything.
So you're,
like
you're just walking around smelling like a meth lab.
Walking around smelling like methane and straight ammonia, I imagine. I have no idea. I have no recollection of how I must have smelled or come across. Nobody made fun of me for being the stinky kid. But they like could tell something was smelly. They went in my bag. They took the sheets out of my bag and were like washed them and hung them up and stuff. And they were like, we're going to hold you back on this hike so that you can take a shower with nobody watching. And I, you know, like, so not even watching, but so that nobody's even here. And I still couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to like disrobe. I think I kind of like washed up, but probably not even close to adequate.
I think you were molested at this fucking camp is what happened.
I don't think I ever was molested. If I was, I definitely totally 100% blocked it out. But I was definitely behaving in a manner that was uber afraid of getting... You know what, dude? I just realized what it was. One time when I was coming out of the shower when I was a kid, my next door neighbors, my best friends that lived across the street, not the same kid, but like this was at a different house when I first moved to Yellow Springs. They were way older than me. They were like 5 or 6 years older than me. But we still played together every day because we lived across the street. And I was getting out of the shower. They were playing basketball in my driveway because I had a nice hoop in my driveway. And I didn't have any curtains in my windows because my windows were behind a bunch of trees and shit. Well, they came when they saw me getting out of the shower or whatever. They saw me in my room or whatever. They came over and started spying on me as I was like drying off and completely naked and were giggling, you know, in the window. And I look up and I see them and I was... horrified.
Horrified. Hang on my hair.
I don't think
where's
I
my sword?
It was a similar situation where I didn't talk to that dude for a long time. And eventually when I did, it was just because it was like I was tired of not having any friends. I don't think I really ever dealt with it or got over it. But it was a huge violation because I felt like my sister was out there playing with them and didn't stop them or at least alert me or anything like that.
Right.
So I think that had something to do with why I was so afraid of being naked.
What if he would compliment you nowadays? Like, hey, dude,
I think
we always thought you had a nice dick. You know?
Yeah, you did have a nice dick. No, it's crazy because I don't know him, but she's still around, I think. But she ended up getting in a car accident years later.
All your prayers were answered.
Well, other people were way, like, fucked up from it. I think somebody may have even died.
Didn't affect you that much?
She was so much older than me that I don't know the details of it, but it was one of those things that it was like a scandal inside of Yellow Springs for a while, and but I don't remember the details of the situation, but I'm friends with her on Facebook, and so she's like around here somewhere. But it was weird because now, like, I was so horrified of being there. I remember one time my dad tried to stop the car because I had to pee and he didn't want to stop at a rest stop. He's like, I just pull the car over and just pee on the side of the road. Just, we're on the highway.
Right.
And I'm like, no, we're not trash people. You know, like, everybody driving by is going to see my wiener. And he's like, nobody's looking for that. No one's going to see it. You'd be off the side of the road. The car will be blocking you. And I was like, no way. I'd rather wet my pants than do that. And flash forward to like doing comedy. Like, I could literally walk out on stage completely naked. I have no fear of being naked because of what you experience talking about your life on stage and not getting laughs. It's like, I could take off my clothes and that would be a better show.
Way scarier. Right?
So it's like, to me, like now, being naked is something I have to remind myself not everybody's cool with. Because being naked is way easier than doing comedy, I think.
Dude, you know, where I grew up in Jackson County, you'd just go out drinking beer, riding back roads for hours and hours.
It's just like Yellow Springs, except you do that with black people, too. Drink a beer, back roads, shoot a gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Shoot a gun. You have black people in Jackson,
though. Oh, yeah,
did
yeah.
Did you hang out with black people in Jackson?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they were a good family.
There were some good ones.
No, it's like there wasn't many when I was growing up. There wasn't many black people, but there was. I would say that I knew of a dozen.
Yeah,
you know, and And the one guy that grew up right beside us, or right beside my family in town where we'd go and take baths in the wintertime, he told me one time, he was like, I go, hey, man, you related to Scott? And he's like, if they're black in this town, we're related. Yeah. I was like, but what about Neil? If they're black in this town, we're related. But we were out running around one night. Not this guy, but me and some other redneck buddies who are all in prison now. But we're just riding around, and you know, if you have to piss, just pull over to the side of the road and just take a piss. You're out in the middle of cornfields and shit. So, like, we're just, the rest of us are just sitting in a car listening to probably AC/DC or something and just bullshit. And then, dude, I just look, I'm in the back seat, and I just look out my window. And he's just on the other side of the road, just right at the edge of the road, squatting, taking a shit. Dude, I start laughing so fucking hard that I can't get words out where I'm just doing this. Right? And then I get everybody else's attention. I'm like slapping them, trying to get them to look over. And everybody looks over, and you can just see the silhouette. It looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger coming to in Terminator, the first one, you know. So it's just, you're just watching somebody take a shit. And he's out there, and I mean, we're hammered or whatever. And he hears us laughing, and he gets pissed off. He's like, man, fuck you guys. Fuck you guys, you don't understand, I got bleeding ulcers.
God, like, you guys, like, well, now you can't get back in the car.
Yeah. And so, oh, dude, it was just, but to just, everything normal, you think somebody's just taking a piss, and then you just look over. Oh, dude, it was unbelievable.
That's a bad, one time, you know where the Salvation Army, or it's a Goodwill or something like that, behind the Midas, by the Dayton Mall. On 725, there's a huge one back there. It used to be a roller rink. It used to be like Skyborne, but bigger. Right. And it was like the happening roller rink. You know, the roller rinks don't really exist anymore, but it was the happening spot. And we went there one time because we were like happening kids. And my dad took me and my sisters there with his girlfriend at the time, this beautiful black Panamanian lady. She was like a model, dumber than a box of rocks, but she was gorgeous. And her kids... And I got along with her kids really. I mean, like, we were like the Black Brady Bunch. Right. You know what I mean? She had three kids. I think she had two kids, a son and a daughter, and we had three kids.
But here's a story of Devontae and the others.
That's going to get made. But anyway, we're there, and we're rolling around. And it was nobody there because we got there, like, right when they opened. But as it started to get, like, later, and it started to get more and more. And then, like, before I knew it, there was, like, hundreds of people there. And I'm riding around, and it gets crowded. And me and my counterpart, Juan, were skating fast. And I ended up tripping and falling with him. And we got all tangled up. And I hit the wall. And they had these wooden goals because they would play roller hockey in there, I guess, on Saturday mornings. And I hit the... And it tore me open on the side. Like, I had this 6-inch gash. It was, like, 2 inches deep. I mean, like, I was like, ah, I didn't know. I railed all the way back up to the counter. I was like, do you have a first aid kit? And they're like, no. And I was like, what? Like, I was, like, shocked. And I was, like, in fifth grade when this happened. And she was like, well, did you cut yourself or something? And I was like, yeah, I think so. She's like, well, let me see it. And I lifted up my shirt, and she passed out. She fainted. And I don't remember what happened right after that. I remember looking at it, and it looks like when Han Solo cuts open the Tauntaun in the Star Wars movie and puts Luke inside to keep him warm. It was just like all this like white fat, and there was like blood starting to come out of it. And like, I thought it was a scrape, but it was a huge laceration. It was like 108 stitches.
Damn.
But when I don't remember what happened after that, to the time that the squad got there. But by the time the squad got there, I had my own audience. I'm like laying down in a corner and everybody's watching. And the first thing that squad does when they get there is cut my pants off of me. And then they cut my underwear. But they don't cut it off me. They just cut it so that they could have access to, because it was right here on my hip. It was really close to my waistline.
He's like, no, cool. I'll walk it off.
I gotta go. It was so horrific having all these people, and they're like giggling as they're cutting my pants off. You know, I'm like seeing it, and I'm like, I'm about to faint from the embarrassment of it all.
Yeah.
And the worst part of it all is like, my dad's a doctor.
All right.
Like, I felt like he should have been able to ascertain that he could have taken me to the emergency room instead of
waiting. Oh, he was still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, motherfucker, what's it? Pops, ain't you embarrassed?
Aren't you embarrassed? Yeah, because like now, if the same thing happened to my son, if nothing was coming out of him, if no organs or anything were like, you know, if nothing was protruding, no bones or nothing, and even if it was a bone or something like that, I'm more confident in my ability to get him to the hospital faster than waiting for an ambulance to get there and then get him to the hospital or whatever. I don't know, we live in a different time. I don't know what the politics behind the situation were completely, but that was, I have a long, like, I, like, you know, when I fell at Brouhaha and busted my face open, like that was like, I was trying to think like, okay, I don't even know how many times I've been in an ambulance.
From like I've only been in it one time, a day or two before I moved up here. Got in a fight with this guy. This is the, I think it's the third time I tried to whoop him, and he split my nose to the bone every time at this point. And so a buddy calls me. He's like, hey, dude, I found him. He's at this restaurant or whatever. And I'd been up.
Had he been hiding, or was he just living his life?
Oh, he just got no reason to hide. So
you got no reason to hide.
I woke up.
And why were you? Why were you whooping taking, him though? Why did you want to whoop him so bad?
Because he whooped me.
No. Revenge whooping.
It was we were at a party one night, and he had just got out of prison for raping this girl or whatever. She was like 12 or something. He was like 19 or 20.
Okay, so he deserves it.
So he gets out, and I remember I spit in his face, and then we square off. And he's a big dude, you know. So we square off, and then we start fighting for a few minutes. And then get broke up, and a couple buddies run and take me and put me in the corner, and they're like, dude, this is my house. What the hell are you doing? In the meantime, nobody took him to a corner, so he just takes off running while they had me in the corner and just split it plumb down to the bubbly. And then so I get that done. Then anyway, I catch him. I wake up that morning and I'm taking Xanax at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and drinking straight liquor. And, you know, by this time, it's probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It's dark. And so, find out where he's at. And so, I go, there's these stairs you have to walk up to. And as we're pulling, my buddy calls me. He's like, hey, I found him. What if I could come and get some? And he's just kind of stirring it up, right? And I'm smashed, right? Yeah. Got no business fighting. As we're pulling up, I can see him up at the back door. So I go sneaking up these stairs, right? I'm like, oh, I've got you now, you son of a bitch. And I like I'm high stepping up. I'm trying to get, and he just turns around and sees me and just pulls up and kicks me so square and true right in the balls. Dude, I am not kidding when I say that I heard him squeak. That's why I say that. It's because from this. And then I was like, oh, fuck. And then I was like, oh, still got to fight. And so then I just take a thrashing of a lifetime. I end up getting my skull cracked open, broken ribs, nose split again. I'm just beat to hell. Get in the car, like, ah, oh, thanks for the heads up, buddy. We make it down maybe 300 yards to this gas station, and the cops pull us over or whatever. And the cops are like, they got my buddy, they stuff him in the cruiser, DUI or whatever they get him for. And then they're like, they go, you need an ambulance? Because I'm blood everywhere. I mean, I'm beat to hell. And I was like, no, man, I'm good. And he goes for his handcuffs. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to need an ambulance. And he lets off the handcuffs. And I'm like, yeah, I definitely need an ambulance. Definitely. And so
I'm having trouble breathing.
Yeah. So, and then they put me in the ambulance. They put me on the stretcher. And they strap me down and all this shit. And so, I can't move.
Yeah.
And so and then my cousin lives across from this gas station. She sees what's going on. And comes over and looks. Sees me getting loaded onto a stretcher, blood everywhere. She starts screaming, crying. It's like, I'm just trying to get out of going to jail. Would you shut the fuck up over there? Anyway, they take me to the hospital and they're packed that night or whatever. And so I'm just sitting there, and you know, for a while the cop's sitting there with me or whatever. And then finally, I don't know if they got another call or what. And he goes, all right, if you walk outside this hospital, I'm going to arrest you. I go, what if I can't just go smoke a cigarette? He goes, if you walk out of this hospital, I'm going to arrest you. I was like, I just like a half of a cigarette. And if you walk out of this hospital, I'm going to arrest you. I'm like, all
right,
so then.
What if I eat one right here?
So he leaves. And now I'm like, I know he's out there just waiting. He knows I'm coming, whatever. So I sat there for a little while, sober up a little bit. And I'm just sitting there with my face split open and shit like that. And there's just like, there's a girl. No, I'm good. There's a girl just like sitting there for like a cheerleading sprain or something. Yeah. And I'm in the chair right beside her. There's all these empty chairs. And I said, just sit down right beside her. And then I just look over at her. Like, no split blood.
What are you in for?
they put me in the CAT scan machine, whatever, and you know, I'm hanging there for a few minutes, and then I'm just like, they're almost done. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't even know why I said it, but like, I don't want to do this. And this time the doctor's pissed off because I kept moving, and he had to start.
Let go of my purse,
and then. To the guard, so they just let me out, and I just walk, call my brother, and he comes, picks me up, and I just.
And the cop never didn't arrest you?
Never, no. He wasn't there. I don't even know why I told that story.
That, we were talking about ambulance rides. I had, I got in an accident one time at 235 in Dayton Yellow Springs, which is right here. You know, if you're on the way to Yellow Springs, that's that light, and I was on my way to summer school. And I had you're allowed to miss one day of summer school through the session. And it was for government. It was elective. I wasn't taking it because I needed it. I was taking it to get it out of the way early.
Right.
And so I could have an extra study hall my senior year. I did it my junior year so that I could have an extra study hall my senior year. Planning.
Damn.
And and also I thought it would be a good way to meet girls, and it was. And but I got in an accident one morning. Because I just went the back road way instead of the straight way, and which was coming up 235. I took like Hyde Road coming out of Yellow Springs to 235.
Where was you at the Career Center?
Is that where no, it was at Fairborn High School. It was at Fairborn High School, but I lived like on the back end of Yellow Springs, and so it was easier for me to come out. I think it's Hyde Road or Enon Road or something like that. You come out the back way of Yellow Springs and you hit 235. For maybe just a couple hundred yards, and then you turn left on Dayton Yellow Springs. So I was getting ready to turn from 235, which you could take all the way to Xenia.
Right.
But I didn't. I just came up on
the short line. Oh, I got you, right.
And I'm going to make that left. And a lady was coming straight, and I didn't see her or whatever. And she just kind of, she hit the side of the car. She ended up in a ditch. She was fine. I was fine. But we both had to take an ambulance for whatever reason, because the damage to the cars looked bad enough or whatever. But I was definitely in shock. But they checked me out. I was fine. My mom picked me up. And actually, it was my buddy picked me up and took me because I was my mom's car. I totaled my mom's car. We only had one car, and my buddy took me to summer school because I had to go because I'd already missed a day. And he was like, "Man, you already missed a day, and you've missed almost half of today." He's like, "You can hang out. We can talk about it afterwards." And I was like, "Yeah, I got in an accident on my way here this morning." And he was like, "Oh, are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you want to tell us about it?" And so I start like. Talking about like what happened or whatever, and I start crying.
And got them where you want them. Buy them. Six mates that weekend, buddy. Woo wee.
Drop the numbers off at the table. I hooked up all my friends with girls.
Dancing tonight, dancing. Southern bound wind, she whispers it's so.